Hello and welcome to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me is my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, September 14th, and this is episode 61.
No icing. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
And starting it off, as we always do, we're going to talk a little bit about the Boston Red Sox, who they're still bad. Nicholas, that's the long, the short, the everything in between of it. They're just still bad at baseball.
We knew it from the start. It's been a tough year. We say it every week. I don't know what else there is to highlight on. Maybe we can touch on some of the bright spots, because there are a couple. Simply put, we split the series with the Tampa Bay Rays this weekend 2-2, so that's not bad. The Rays residing in first place in the division. It's in a way, I almost wish we lost, because then like the Yankees would be farther from first place. But and possibly the brightest spot of all has been the prospect the Red Sox brought up 2 weeks ago, Bobby Dalbec. We talked about him last week, I believe. We're going to touch more on him this week. He's just one of five players in MLB history to homer five times in their first 10 games, and he did it five games in a row. He is up to six or seven total home runs now and has really been a bright spot on this Red Sox offense.
Yeah, and if you look at the list of players other than him that have done this, I mean, you're talking about some of the best players in the game right now, such as Nolan Arenado, and some of the best players in history, with I believe Willie Mays is also on that list. I can't remember the other two, but he's really just looked good out there. He's had a lot of big hits, a lot of home runs, obviously. Gives you something to root for and something to be excited about in a year that there really hasn't been much.
So in 25 at-bats, he has homered five times. For those of you not great at math, that is a fifth of the time, or 20% he comes to the plate, he's going yards so far.
That's actually insane.
Oh, that was last seven games. I apologize. That is completely wrong. 43 at-bats for six home runs. So in the last week, he's homered 20% of the time. Total, that's a much lower number, like 12 or something.
Even still, it's been incredible to watch. And, you know, the pitching isn't great. And also, going back to the series we split with the Rays, I'm pretty sure both games we won were like pretty close. I think one was a one-score game, and the one last night was 6-3, but I'm pretty sure the two games we lost, we got blown out in at least one of them.
Yeah, it was 11-1, I believe, in the first game that we lost.
Oh,
but,
awesome.
You dug up a statistic that we talked about briefly last time that you couldn't find out. Do you want to share that with the listeners?
Oh, yeah. So, of course, I couldn't find a good way to do this, because I'm not very good with like Baseball Reference, or I'm sure a lot of other stats websites could have done this for me. So I just went through and did it the old-fashioned way, and I counted how many times the Red Sox have been scored on in the first inning by opening every single game, looking at the box score, and then marking it down every time that they got scored on. So the Red Sox have been scored on 17 times in the first inning in 48 games. So to be fair, I think I said last time I thought it was around half the games. I was a little bit off on that, but in such a small sample, it's still a lot of times, that's a third of the games, to be playing typically out of the hole in the first inning. There are very few times that when the other team scored, we also scored. We may have scored before them or after them, but even still, it's just when you can't keep it clean out of the first inning, it just kind of sets the tone for the game a lot of the time.
Yeah, on top of that, just if you were a regular Red Sox watcher, you will notice a lot of variation in lineup. The Red Sox going with different looks, trying out different players in different positions. I think this is just kind of an experimental year for the Red Sox, and honestly, baseball as a whole, given the current circumstances, of course, with the COVID-19 pandemic. But, you know, the Red Sox, unfortunately, I don't believe are going anywhere this year. I will say, just maybe the tiny,
we're going en route to the first overall pick. That's about the only place we're going.
The tiniest grain of hope possible. They are only 9.5 games back of the wild card. So given some miracle,
don't let them get hot.
Given some miracle, we could end up in a wild card spot, but that involves getting to 500. While I believe the Astros are the team like on the fringe of the wild card there. So we'd need someone like them, which I absolutely wouldn't mind them going on a 10-game losing streak. But yeah, we need basically a miracle to happen if we want to see any chance of the postseason. I don't believe that's going to happen. And even if we were to make the postseason, we don't have the weapons to be effective against a team like, I mean, the Yankees, the Rays, and then you get it over to the National League. The teams get even stronger, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's a season we should bank on any sort of playoff appearance. To be fair, we can get hyped because the Yankees are currently, I still believe, third in the AL East and probably right around that edge of the playoffs. I don't know if they're a wild card or what kind of the deal is there. You can maybe look that up if you want to. But, I mean, I talked about this, I think, yesterday. We talked about it a little bit off air. But if there were ever a season to suck, why not suck when it's the shortest season you're going to play, theoretically, in hopefully forever?
Yeah, so I have the postseason standings, if you will, right now. And this is as of all the games yesterday, so this is up to date. And it looks like they are going with, I don't know if we've talked about this, they're going with the top two from each division and then two wildcard teams.
We've probably touched on that like a while ago, but
I don't remember, to be honest.
That's fair.
But the Yankees and the Indians are currently the ones on the fringe of the wild card. So we would have to catch up with the Yankees, I apologize, because the Astros are like second in their division type of thing. So they aren't in the wild card. They're just getting that second AL Central spot.
Okay.
But yeah, so a lot of experimentation, I'd say, going on with the Red Sox. And I mean, that's kind of the only thing you can do is try to figure a couple things out in a season that's not going great for you.
Yeah, just sort out, you know, kind of who's going to be around and stuff. I guess we'll see more of that as the season continues. And I think that wraps it up, unless there's anything else that you wanted to talk about.
I think that's it. We can move on from them.
All right, well, let's get out of that dumpster fire. Moving to something much more exciting in the Boston Celtics, who recently beat the Toronto Raptors, defending champion Toronto Raptors, 4-3 in a 7-game series. Moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals to face the Miami Heat.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. When we went from being up 3-2, pardon me while I just butcher that sentence, to the 3-3 tie going into Game 7, I saw a lot of people saying, you know, this is Boston. We are made for Game 7s, and I absolutely agree. I just think the momentum swing from being down 3-2 to forcing the game 7 is so big that you can't discount that, especially in a team that has obviously been here before in the defending champion Raptors. So it's no surprise that this came down to a very close game and some very clutch plays at the end. The Celtics just beating out the Raptors by 5 points, 92-87. We saw the last two or three games of the series just very defensive, with neither team really scratching that 100-point mark, aside from the double OT? Was it double OT?
Yeah, double OT in game 6. I think it was like 120s was the scores. Were,
yeah, and that's that, and that's with, what, 10 extra minutes?
I don't know why I can't think of how long overtime is right now.
It's five in basketball.
Well, then there you go.
But yeah, you wanna talk about some of the big plays at the end of that game 7 to kind of seal the victory?
Yeah, so this is one play that I haven't seen talked about a lot, but I was, first of all, blown away by it and also really excited. Marcus Smart had a big block. I don't remember on who in like the last 30-ish seconds on a layup. It was, I think, to bring the game to either tied or within one score. And Marcus Smart with a beautiful block off the backboard. I hate to say it, but very reminiscent of LeBron James's block on, I think it was Andre Iguodala all those years ago, that still gets replayed to this day, but no one talks about this one. We all know why. And then Jason Tatum with a huge rebound off of a second missed free throw in a row by Grant Williams. Yeah, he really did have a chance to ice the game there, kind of choked it, but Tatum went up and over to grab this rebound and actually got fouled on the way up. So he shot two free throws that eventually iced the game for us. And I think two really big plays that just showed the Celtics both defensive prowess and just, you know, their want to move on. This is a young team, but that doesn't mean they want it any less than anybody else in this league.
Yeah, I want to touch on the free throws by Grant Williams really quick. I'm pulling up his reference for right now because I want to touch on some stats. This is something that could affect the Celtics going forward. I think, you know, you have a younger guy in Grant Williams. Is he a rookie?
He is a rookie this year, yes.
Okay. I was unsure if it was his first or second year. You know, you have a younger guy in Grant Williams coming to the free throw line in probably, yeah, I mean, as a rookie, probably the biggest moment of his career so far.
For sure.
Or one of the biggest, I don't, but you know, in his inability to hit those free throws, Grant, he's only a 72% free throw shooter on the year. Hang on, sorry, can you hear the blender in the background?
Nope, but there's a car driving by me, so. Okay. Also, I wanted to quickly let you know, so I have my like stream deck pulled up. So if I make like a loud noise into the mic, know that it isn't picking it up and just like keep going. Because I realize that you can hear the Discord call and I'm not muting myself in that, but I'm muting myself for the recording.
Okay. Kind of, I was just bunting stuff, so I wanted to be sure. You want to hold up your little card or
I already did.
Okay. I'm just going to start over with Grant Williams then. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So I want to go back to and touch quickly on the Grant Williams free throws again, because, you know, a rookie, probably one of the biggest moments, if not the biggest of his career so far, and his inability to hit those free throws. Granted, that was a poor choice of words, I guess. But he's only a 72% free throw shooter on the year. But we definitely need guys coming down the stretch against the Heat. And, you know, if we want to look forward to probably one of the LA teams in the finals, not that we want to get too ahead of ourselves. Those are plays we need to make. So go ahead.
Definitely. And if you looked at game seven as a whole, I'm pretty sure the Celtics free throw shooting that entire game was definitely below average. I know Jason Tatum missed one at the end, but it felt like we missed a lot of free throws. And it's just, they call it, I think I've used this reference before, but like they call it the charity stripe for a reason. Like it's gifting you a free point, free 2 points even. We need to capitalize on this opportunity. We're coming down the stretch. We're playing theoretically the best teams in basketball right now. You need to get any points possible when given to you. And I'm not saying that these guys are going to go out here and shoot 100% from the line every single night. That's unrealistic, but I think definitely need a better showing than we had in game seven in terms of free throws.
Yeah, you bring up a really great point. You want to take a guess what they shot for free throws in game seven?
Percentage wise or number? Because I couldn't tell you the number. I'm going to go like 75.
56.5, 57%.
What were the numbers on that?
13 for 23, and they were only 24%, 9 for 38 on three-pointers. So not a great overall shooting night. Granted, Toronto, one of the better defensive teams in the league. Those younger guys, just they need to realize this is the big time, and they need to step up. In our older guys, especially in Kemba, and it's funny I say older, but Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, guys who have been here before, need to step up. Marcus Smart also, and, you know, definitely lead the way. And I think they are so far. So you mentioned we are seeing the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, who took care of the Bucks quite handily, I might add, in five games. What do you like? What don't you like going into this series?
I want to walk back just for a second to say that this is the third time in 4 years that the Celtics have been to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I like the idea of that, some playoff experience there. I know the Heat are also a relatively good franchise. I don't know how they've done in recent years in terms of how far they've made it in the playoffs, but I do think that despite how young a lot of this Celtics team is, they do have an okay amount of playoff experience in terms of Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, like you said, Kemba Walker, although him being stuck in Charlotte all those years, I'm not sure it gave him a ton of playoff experience, but these are guys that, you know, they've been here before. They know what it's like. I don't think almost any of them, at least as Celtics, have made it to the finals, obviously, because the Celtics haven't been to the finals in quite a while, but I like our playoff experience. We're playing a tough Miami Heat team. We saw them take care of the best team in basketball in five games. They're going to put up a fight. I've been looking at their point spreads. They're a very spread out scoring team. Jimmy Butler obviously being the biggest name there, but even he on a given night maybe drops 20 to 30, and that leaves a lot of points to be made up for. I think a lot of these guys, you know, starting lineup, coming off the bench, they're scorers. They can get points. They've shown it, and I think that's going to be a huge thing for the Celtics, is not just focusing on, you know, the one main scorer, the couple main stars in this team. You need to focus on everyone, because everyone's very capable of scoring on that Miami Heat team.
Yep. So as background, the last time the Heat were in the Eastern Conference Finals was back in 2014, where they actually went to the finals and lost to the Spurs.
Guessing that was the big three team.
Yep. They had won the previous 2 years, and that is the stretch of the years where they went all 4 years in a row from 2010-11 to 13-14. Oh, that's this year. Sorry, I got confused because it said one Eastern Conference semis, but that's this year. Their only 2 year playoff appearances were 17-18, where they lost in the first round, and then 15-16, where they lost in the second round of the semis. And I don't know to who, but you're right. You know, even though we do have a younger Celtics team, we have guys with that experience and they need to step up. I think it's a lot of this is going to be, and I was texting one of my friends about this, was I think Brad Stevens needs kind of to find a way to shut down Jimmy Butler. I think that is a big key, because you were just pointing out how, you know, the points are pretty spread out across the Heat. That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, still, so Jimmy Butler is their main guy.
Yeah, I think if Brad Stevens can find a way to negate Jimmy Butler, that will give us a huge leg up. And I like our matchup wise after, you know, the Jimmy Butler being their top guy, with maybe going head to head with Tatum or Kemba or whoever you list as our number one. That's going to be a pretty equal matchup. But I feel like after that, we are going to have guys that win those single matchups. And granted, it doesn't come down to one person. But I think a lot of this is on Brad Stevens and his defensive mindedness to figure out a way to at least lessen the impact of Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, and I definitely think if there were ever a team to do it, it could be the Celtics. I mean, we have some of the best defenders in the league, and, you know, Marcus Smart, a lot of other guys good in the paint. Daniel Tice has been a very good defensive presence, and I think that I don't know how I'm sure Jimmy Butler is probably much taller than Marcus Smart, but I mean, is it worth, you know, bringing a second guy onto Jimmy Butler if he starts going off? Bring in Marcus Smart to help, you know, double team him, and like you said, negate that Jimmy Butler presence and make someone else make shots. I mean, when it comes down to it, obviously if you're playing 2-on-1 defending someone, there's going to be an open man, but do you just force them to take the shots? You take that chance with Jimmy Butler out of the game?
I don't know if it's going to come down to kind of a double coverage type of thing. I think it's going to try and force Jimmy Butler to go places on the court maybe that is not as comfortable scoring. To give you some perspective here, Jimmy Butler is 6'7", Marcus Smart is 6'3", I believe. Yep. So a little bit of height difference there, but I think you're right in having one of our best defenders locked down, arguably their best offensive player, is definitely a good start. I think it's going to take more than that, though, because a player like Jimmy Butler is definitely going to figure out how to play against a single guy. And of course, you can't have Marcus Smart out there all the time.
Yeah, and I think for me, that's the big thing, is just continuing to play very good defense. I think one thing we really do need to work on, and I know we kind of touched on it with the free throws as well, is just, you know, getting points where we can. We see a lot of three-point shooting in several of the games throughout that Toronto series, were just the Celtics, it seemed like, could not get the ball in the net from behind the arc. I know Jaylen Brown had a couple of pretty horrendous nights from three-point range. I know he had one game where I think he shot like 1-for-10, 1-for-11. He was pulling a lot of threes that weren't going in game 7 as well, which really concerned me. And it's, I don't know if it's a matter of you don't take that shot as often, or you just kind of hope it goes in more often. I think it's pretty uncharacteristic compared to how he's played all season long, so I'm not going to sit here and get real upset about it, but it's definitely something to keep in mind, where this is the point where you really can't make a lot of those mistakes. You can't have those off nights if you want to keep moving on.
Yeah, and I think now it's just a matter of, do you have anything you want to say in case of a series outcome? Do you want to make it a prediction? Or I'm really torn because I haven't watched a whole lot of Heat basketball, obviously, this year, and it's been a weird one with the huge pause in the middle. But my gut is really telling me that this is a 6 or 7 game series.
Yeah, I think anything at this point, you're not going to see a big blowout to one side or another. It's funny because when Jimmy Butler kind of bounced around for a couple years there from the Timberwolves to the Sixers, finally down to the Heat, it kind of seemed like he had just been condemned to Miami where he'd like do nothing. But here he's carried a pretty good Heat team all the way to the conference finals, obviously in a weird year, but still obviously presents a lot of a threat. But also one thing we didn't really write down here, but I think we should talk about for a second, is the fact that we should be getting Gordon Hayward back for this series, who's been out since I believe the
First round, right?
first round, like first or second game maybe, even with an ankle injury. Always scary, obviously, with that ankle anytime it gets injured, considering what happened a couple years ago. But definitely going to be a presence to come back, one of our superstars and a guy who can really change the pace of the game, change the tone of the game, and very excited to see him back. I don't know what his, expected return is exactly in terms of if he's like ready for game one or what the deal is going to be, but I definitely think we will see him at some point in this series. And a guy that we didn't really talk about a lot because he hasn't been in much of the playoffs in terms of this run, but I think a guy that really can add a lot to this Celtics team when he's on the court.
Yeah, that was a good point. I completely forgot. I think it's one of those things they're not going to rush it. Clearly, what the Celtics are doing right now is working. So you kind of don't want to risk upsetting that balance. But Gordon Hayward actually has some very good stats against the Heat this year. I think averaging over 20 points a game, 8 rebounds a game, on some pretty good shooting. So could be a good guy kind of to have him, maybe even coming off the bench to provide some support in this series.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of close it out here, for me, I think the overall premise, I just kind of thought about this now. I think we want to take this, like, we want this series to be a defensive series. I don't like our chances as much if we get into a shootout. I know, obviously, the Celtics are a very good scoring team, but we win those defensive games. And I think if it comes down to an all-out shootout, I'm not sure how I feel considering our shooting kind of in the last round, in those last couple of games. I think that we need to play our defensive style of the basketball. I mean, if we win 80 something to 70 something, I'm okay with that. I don't need a huge scoring game. I just need the Celtics to play their game because I like them if it's going to be a close defensive game rather than an all-out shootout.
I think you bring up some great points. I mean, hey, it doesn't matter what the final score is. If you have one more point than the other team, you win. So whether it's 65, 64, 123 to 122, you still get a win in the or a one in the win column, rather. And that is going to wrap up the Celtics. Before we get into the Bruins, though, a quick word from our sponsor. And now heading into the Boston Bruins, this was kind of a false pretense because, the Bruins getting out of the playoffs a couple weeks ago, unfortunately. We don't really have anything to talk about. They are just in the offseason now. You have two very good series going on to, go to the Stanley Cup Finals. But other than that, we don't really have anything for the Bruins. Now we will get into the Patriots, who played their first game yesterday against Miami Dolphins. And Chams, I'm just going to let you run loose.
Oh, baby, this is my time. Every week I get excited for this. So, like you mentioned, the Patriots with their first game yesterday in a 21-11 win at home against the Miami Dolphins. And there's a whole lot to unpack with this game, and I think we'll definitely spend some time doing that. But the Patriots won a football game. Everyone kind of questioned what we were going to look like heading into the season. We definitely looked a lot different out there on the field, but certainly taking advantage, in a game where this kind of almost takes the place of preseason. We had no preseason games this year. We had no time to kind of get out all the, any problems we had with our offense or defense and kind of work out the kinks. This was the way to do it, and definitely taking advantage of a weaker Miami Dolphins team, but a good solid team win in which the Patriots really just controlled the ball and definitely just attacked the ground game.
I was gonna let you keep going. I was sitting back with my mic off, but if you want me to hop in here, yeah. You mentioned the 21-11 win over the Dolphins. And again, you said a very different looking team, but the Patriots are starting off 1-0, regardless of what we look like and what happened on the field. That is a win. Very different, I think. A very different offensive look. A lot more rushing attempts than we were used to. Obviously, Cam Newton, known as a very mobile QB, actually rushed for two of his own touchdowns, which set a record for the most rushing attempts and yards by a quarterback in the Belichick era. Unsurprising, as the Belichick era has only been Brady and Bledsoe, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yep, so and 15 rushing attempts.
Matt Castle or whoever
Castle. Oh, that the
I forget
guy
one that. Of that one of them played for us in 2009.
That's true. So that franchise record is, or sorry, not franchise record, record under Bill Belichick is 15 rushing attempts for 75 yards. That's what Cam Newton did yesterday, adding again the two touchdowns. Overall, a very run heavy offense, with the offense in general generating 217 rushing yards and an extra TD from our running, who was it, Sonny Michel, who ran it in?
I believe it was Michel.
Yep, adding a third TD to the offense. Overall, 42 carries by five different rushers.
Yeah, and like we said, it's a very different look. I mean, it was crazy watching a football game and Tom Brady didn't walk out under center. And we can talk about him probably at the end a little bit if you want to talk about it at all. But I'm happy with what we saw, that the Patriots, and I think Bill Belichick has really worked on getting a scheme that works for this team, that plays to their strengths. And it might have been a little bit more taking advantage of a weaker, you know, Miami defense. Obviously wasn't a huge blowout or anything. It was probably a closer game than it even needed to be, considering we had a couple of unlucky plays. N'Keal Harry fumbling the ball out of the end zone on what would have been, you know, a play on the 1 yard line, that kind of stuff. But I think they did a good job. They play to their strengths. We talked about Cam Newton, 15 rushing attempts for 75 yards. Watching a play designed for the quarterback to run the ball is basically foreign to both of us. We have, you know, he runs for, you know, 15, 20 yards maybe on a good carry, on a really good carry, that is. But like, Tom Brady never did that. That's the crazy part. So very different seeing our quarterback basically with the green light to just rush on a lot of plays. But I'll talk about that later. I think offense doing well. We didn't have a ton of action through the air. I think Cam Newton was maybe 15 for 19 passing. Yes, he was exactly that, with 155 yards. No touchdowns through the air, but we talked about the offense a lot here and a lot of, you know, ground and pound football. But at the same time, on the other side of the field, the defense picking up right where they left off. Three interceptions against Ryan Fitzpatrick from Stephon Gilmore, J.C. Jackson, and a guy I haven't really heard much of, but maybe we'll hear more about in the future, Adrian Phillips. One of those at the end, I think, kind of closing out the game, but they looked good. I mean, I think I would have liked a couple more points on the board, but it's not big of Belichick to keep running up the score when it's really not necessary.
Yeah, and I see you have this written down here now. You know, it's still some questions, obviously. Is Cam going to be able to produce at this rate every week? Against certain teams, obviously, we're not going to be able to rush the ball as much. I think you bring up a great point, maybe taking advantage of a weaker and not as put together Miami Dolphins team, especially, you know, week one without the preseason, shortened training camps, that type of thing. I still think Cam definitely needs to proof he can throw the ball. That is going to make him that much more dangerous to other teams if they know they have to guard against the rush and, you know, his ability to attack through the air. But I do think that'll come in due time. You know, 15 for 19 for, would you, 150 yards, is that what you
155,
said?
155, I believe.
155. That's not a bad day. You bring up the N'Keal Harry fumble that, you know, possibly had he held on to that, could have gone for a, I don't remember if he was down or not, but that could have been a passing touchdown right there if he made it that extra yard. More than likely, if we had gotten that play, it would have been Cam Newton has three rushing touchdowns. But this is only week one. Obviously, still some questions, but a very reassuring start to, you know, us Patriots fans, who I think we weren't too concerned when you get a guy like Cam Newton, who, you know, former MVP, you are you know, pretty confident. Obviously you can't replace Brady, but I think this also, you know, kind of shows the Patriots off to the rest of the football world, and hey, we're still here to compete.
Yeah, I was going to use that exact phrase actually, but I think one of the big things for me is we saw a great rushing game, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that. But Cam, I think in my mind still needs to prove his arm. I think he needs to I don't think, you know, air the ball out all the time, because we don't have a ton of these like speedster receivers who are going to just burn you going up the field. There's not always going to be that one guy who just flies by, you know, the corner or the safety, whatever it's going to be. But I do think we need to see a little bit more passing. I think give it a couple of weeks, people are going to know kind of what the Patriots attack is, and they're going to have to adjust to that. I would like to see also a little bit more of a pass first approach with Cam Newton. It looked like if he went through his first read, looked at his first guy and wasn't open, you basically just saw him tuck the ball and go for it. I would like him to know, try to pass the ball a little bit more. That being said, if you throw 15 passes for 150 yards and no interceptions, you're obviously not making a lot of bad throws. You're not giving the other team a chance to pick you off, that kind of stuff, which is obviously a positive of that, you know, running approach. But I do think that you're not going to beat every team on the ground. There's a lot of teams that are going to have good run defenses coming up. We have, you know, Kansas City in week 4. We're going to have San Francisco in week 7. We have Baltimore in week 10. I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of ourselves now, but those are really great run defense teams. And I mean, even Seattle next week, I don't think we're going to be able to get away with the exact same approach. That being said, I don't think we need to force Cam Newton into making bad throws just for the sake of throwing the ball, but I would like to see him. We do have some decent receivers out there. I was very excited with N'Keal Harry minus his fumble. I think Edelman obviously is a big guy out there for us. And I do think we have some good players and guys who are able to catch the ball and really make something happen. But I would like to see a little bit more in the air from Cam Newton. Granted, it was week 1. We can't complain too much. We walk away with a win. At the end of the day, I'm a very, very happy Patriots fan given all the changes, all the opt-outs, all the trades and stuff we had this past season. This past offseason, rather. I'm very glad with how yesterday went.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't complain about much in a weird season where you start off 1-0. Do you want to get into maybe some extra fantasy stuff now that it's looking like it may become a little staple of the football section here?
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be fantasy if you didn't absolutely blow it on at least one of your picks here. So last week, to recap, a couple of my sleepers were not even sleepers, just picks for the week. Well, Will Fuller in that Thursday night game. I very now kind of going back on this begrudgingly said, you know, Leonard Fournette might do something in Tampa Bay, and it might just be because he's new there, or it might be because they have, I believe it's Ronald Barber there, who's actually a very good running back as well. Leonard Fournette didn't do a whole lot of anything, and I also said watch out for Joe Burrow, and I'll kind of recap those. So Will Fuller, you have down here, he had 19.2 points in PPR scoring. I don't know exactly how many he'd have in non-PPR leagues, but I think a decent pick. He looked good out there. Was a very good target for Deshaun Watson, now missing DeAndre Hopkins, and one of the best receivers in the league, and he had an absolute game in Arizona, but we don't need to really break that down. Leonard Fournette with only 2.9 points really didn't do much, and like I said, I don't know if he's just new to the system or if they prefer Barber over him, what that's going to be, but you know, it's fantasy. Sometimes we're going to make bad picks. That's whatever. Joe Burrow, I think the points aren't quite reflective of his performance. 16.32 is what you have here with, I'm guessing, like the most standard scoring model. But he looked all right. He had, a pick or two in that first game, which wasn't great. But he had flashes of that first overall pick to him. He had a great two-minute drill drive at the end of the game, which, unfortunately, Cincinnati actually missed the kick to tie the game with a possible injury to their kicker, which looked very bad. But, you know, not a great point showing for a quarterback, but I do think a guy who he had those glimpses of he could be something in this league, and I definitely think could be very cool.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add. I'm, you know, a very good performance by Will Fuller. Anytime your wide receiver one or two can post, in my opinion, 15 plus points, that's a great performance. Leonard Fournette, I'm going to tell you, one of those 2.9 points came on a reception. So if you're in a PPR league, PPR.
That's tough.
They're all PPR. Because
they're all PPR. Okay.
I just went through the league that I was in. And I believe, I don't know if this is true, if you're in an ESPN fantasy league, I believe like most of them are PPR leagues, which
I think it's the standard on ESPN. Yeah.
For those who don't know, point per perception, you get an extra point for every, you know, catch a guy makes, running back or wide receiver. Anyway, Joe Burrow, what I chalk up is kind of like an average performance from a quarterback. So
you also have to keep in mind it is his first NFL
game. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, not a bad showing, but usually you're looking for your quarterback to, you know, scrape at least into those 20s and maybe post that. But again, week one, his first NFL start was against the Chargers. So, you know, he's definitely going to see some tougher teams, I think, this year. The Chargers aren't too great, if I'm correct.
No, they're not. And they're also missing their best safety for the entire season, and Derwin James being out, I believe.
So it could get worse before it gets better for Joe Burrow. I don't know exactly what the Bengals... Well, they're playing the Browns, actually, so it probably will get better this week, if we're being honest. And you have a couple more guys, maybe, that you want people to at least be on the lookout for. I don't know that I call these sleepers. I just call these... If you can somehow find these guys on the waivers, I'd definitely take them. Fournette is the only guy last week you'd probably be able to find the waivers. Fuller and Burrow, I think, are pretty much snatched up in most leagues.
Yeah, and Fournette you can probably do away with for a couple of weeks until we really figure out what the run game is going to be like in Tampa Bay. But a couple more guys this week. I have a lot more high profile players, so you're probably looking at more of a trade scenario here than you are at a simple waiver wire acquisition. But my first guy who might actually still be on waivers because he's pretty low key is, I believe, Scotty Miller from the Buccaneers. And you look at a lot of big names there in Tampa Bay. You have Rob Gronkowski, you have Chris Godwin, you have Mike Evans, you have OJ Howard, all these names. But a guy that really stood out yesterday was Scotty Miller. And that's obviously very hard to make these predictions based on a very, very small sample size of a single game. But he looked like a sneaky guy where he can get those plays because the defense has to be so drawn to all the other offensive talent that's on the field at one time with that Tampa Bay team. And might be a guy that can sneak off of waivers and can get you a good amount of points, especially in PPR. He got a lot of looks, and I know the announcers talked a lot about Brady really liking him as a target. So moving forward, it's always risky to pick a receiver on a Tom Brady team, but I think Scotty Miller could be...
Brady really does love to spread the receptions out. We saw it here in New England. I think, especially like you said, with all those weapons in Tampa Bay, it's something you're going to see. But I do agree, a guy to keep an eye on because he did look good yesterday.
Yeah, and then another guy, J.K. Dobbins, I believe, with the Ravens, looked pretty good. He got a lot of touches on the ball, considering they also have a great running back in Mark Ingram. I don't know if this means he's going to be getting a lot of the work, or it just meant that he was getting a lot of work in this particular game, but probably a guy that might already be off of waivers. I don't know if he's claimed in my league, but I think a guy that everyone kind of overlooks, given the fact that Mark Ingram is also on that team, and with Lamar Jackson, a very run heavy attack there in Baltimore, I think he could be another good pick to get a lot of touches on the ball. Moving on, these last three are definitely more trades than you'll see most likely, getting them off of waivers. But quickly, Josh Allen, who I know isn't the best throwing the ball. He's got a really strong arm on him, but he definitely needs to work on his accuracy and stuff when throwing the ball deep. But he can move. He showed it yesterday with, I believe, one or two rushing touchdowns and then a couple more through the air. Obviously, playing the Jets, not a great team, but another guy that could be, you know, maybe just look to pick him up the week that your quarterback, you know, your main guy's on bye week. Maybe that's a good way to go. Moving over to another very rushing quarterback, and Kyler Murray, he had a great game against a very tough 49ers defense. The Cardinals pulling out the win in week one, a huge divisional game there. But I think he can do as much with his feet as he can with his arm. You see why he was a first overall pick and a Heisman winner. And I think he had just short of 100 rushing yards because he kneeled down twice to end the game, which took, I think, like 2 or 3 yards away from him. But I think he had like a 25-ish yard rush for a score yesterday, and he did more work through the air with a great target in DeAndre Hopkins now, and he's got a lot of good guys there. He's got Larry Fitzgerald, one of the most seasoned and one of the, you know, best receivers history-wise in the league right now. I think he's got a lot going for him there, so Kyler Murray could be another good guy to just look to pick him up for a couple weeks that you think your other quarterback has a couple of tough matchups, whatever it may be. And lastly, I know I've talked a lot here, Raheem Mostert from the 49ers. He had another huge game, partially due to the fact that he had his first reception for, I believe, 76 yards and a score. But he's a guy that with the 49ers, we talked about a lot last year. They had this very strange, like, three-pronged running approach where they had Mostert, they had Matt Breida. They had a lot of good guys in the backfield. I can't think of the third guy who it would have been. maybe Jerick McKinnon. I might be wrong. I don't know. But Raheem Mostert looking like he's going to get a lot of the touches for this season and a very, very dynamic player. And I think it'd be very good on this 49ers offense. So a couple of guys to look out for on the fantasy waivers, possible trade acquisitions in weeks moving forward. I'm finally done with that. So Nicholas, go for it and say something.
Okay, I was just going to take you through some numbers here. Josh Allen had one rushing touchdown as opposed to two. Two fumbles, though, so maybe something to keep an eye on there. He does like to carry the ball a lot. That being said, he's rostered in 91.5% of leagues. So if you're in that odd 8.5% where he isn't a maybe, you know, a good pickup, he did post 28 points yesterday. Kyler Murray, I believe, is not... in as many, oh no, he's more rostered, pardon me, with a 99 percent roster rate.
Oh, wow.
Is there, keep in mind this is only ESPN league, so if you use something other than ESPN, these numbers are not accurate, and depending like your league format too. And then I can never say this guy, Mostert, sorry. I always get his name wrong. Yeah, well, he was on my bench yesterday for one of my teams, so that's Ooh. Fun. But he is rostered in 93.3 of ESPN leagues. You will probably see that spike this week if I had to guess. Again, I don't know that he's a solid lock for a running back spot, depending on who you have. I think a pretty good flex option. You bring up some good points with, you know, this wasn't unlike him as of last week, where he would go off for a week and then maybe you don't see him as much the next week.
Yeah, and I'm obviously take everything with a grain of salt. I don't know that much about what I'm doing.
We are by no means professionals.
Don't put a lot of money or, you know, value in a lot of these picks, but I'm looking up now. So J.K. Dobbins, at least, and I do through NFL Fantasy for me, he's in 73.3% of leagues and started in 2.1% of those leagues. So looking at his stats here, definitely very inflated because he only had 7 attempts for 22 yards, but 2 touchdowns. And if he's their goal line guy, if he's their red zone guy, I'll take those garbage time points all day long. Points are points, baby, and it does not matter where they come from.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I think we are both looking pretty good in our week one matchups. I know we watched most of the games together yesterday, but I'm sitting with a pretty hefty lead. What about you?
I'm doing all right, and I'm quickly looking up Scott Miller, only owned in 4.7% of NFL Fantasy League, so maybe a little sleeper there. Yeah, I'm looking pretty healthy lead. I think I'm up by, actually, I'm only up by 6 points, but I have two guys going into tonight's game as opposed to my opponent's one, so I'm hoping that that we can pull out the win. Due largely in part to huge games by Chris Carson and Devontae Adams, who absolutely shredded that Minnesota defense yesterday, but we're looking all right. Once again, I have terrible luck with fantasy, it seems, so we'll see how it goes, and you'll probably hear me complain about it next week. But I think that will wrap up everything we have to talk about in terms of the fantasy football segment of this
episode. Yeah, and I think that pretty much, maybe we can end with Tom Brady here, but just to touch on something we talked about last week, kind of a gambling segment. I don't know that this is going to become a weekly thing or not, because, you know, we don't gamble that much. And if we feel bad enough about making you lose your fantasy football league, we're going to feel even worse about making you lose some actual money, which for those of you in fantasy may be both. So sorry about that. But the interesting, just some movements that I found interesting in the gambling odds. We talked about the odds to win the Super Bowl for the Pats and the odds to win the division. Both of those moving in the Pats' favor this week, with the Super Bowl odds going from plus 2000 pre-week one to plus 1800 after their first game, and the division moving from plus 130 to plus 110 after their first game. Interestingly enough, the Bills are still favored to win the division. They are sitting at plus 100 right now.
I was going to say, very interesting seeing our odds to win the division actually going, I guess, up in a way, gambling terms, going the odds, you know, being more in the Patriots' favor, making you less money, lower odds from plus 130 to 110. But I think that's interesting considering the Bills are definitely our biggest competition out of the AFC East, and with them winning as well, it's not like we got ahead this week by any means. And I'll definitely want to keep a watch on those odds, especially in the division, considering we don't play another team in our division until week 8, which we actually do play at Buffalo. So I think that'll be a very, very interesting game. Obviously, a lot of football between now and then, but I think those numbers will definitely continue to change with weeks and weeks to come.
Yeah, and I think it's just something fun to look at because I do think that the odds kind of reflect the football world's, you know, faith in the Patriots. And I think that's mostly what these moves are about, is there were a lot of questions going into week one, especially, you know, we've talked about opt-outs, different quarterback, different, very different looking offense, very different looking defense too. So I think that week one win really, you know, put some extra faith behind the Patriots in the football world. Do we want to close just real quick, talk about Tom Brady here?
Yes, and then I have one other quick thing after that. But
okay,
Tom Brady taking an L in his first week in Tampa Bay, and it's weird joking about Tom Brady losing a game and not being upset about it. I felt bad. He definitely looked very, I don't want to say shaky, he looked good. He made a lot of good throws, but also two interceptions on the day, a loss to the New Orleans Saints, obviously one of the best teams in the NFL right now in the New Orleans Saints. But I think as this, we talked about it last week, the narrative of who wins, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick, check one up for old Bill right now. We're up 1-0 in that category, but I think it's way too early to say one or the other. I don't care. I want them to both independently succeed. And it, you know, I like Tom Brady. I still like him. I'm sad he left. Great. Yeah, all of that. But I think yesterday watching those first games with, you know, Cam Newton, for me, it was much weirder watching Brady in a Bucs jersey than it was watching someone else in a Patriots jersey, in my opinion. And you can kind of put your two cents in on that in a second. But I think this is the reality of what's going on. We're not going to have Tom Brady again in New England playing for our team, and that's that. He's going to be playing somewhere else, so I think it's not really worth getting hung up over at this point. I think there's a lot of closure for me yesterday in terms of like, all right, this is what it's looking like. We're just going to have to roll with it, and definitely a rough day in Tampa Bay for Tom. Couldn't get a lot going on the offense, it felt like, and just, we talked about this. You can have a lot of weapons. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the better team all the time. And I think that was definitely shown yesterday for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah. For me, actually, it was weirder seeing a different QB in a Patriots uniform than it was seeing Tom Brady in a Bucs uniform. I kind of have gotten to the fact that he is unfortunately no longer in this team, as much as I may wish and hope. It was just odd watching our QB kind of run circles around the other team because that's so foreign to us. I will say, I do want to talk about how his first touchdown as a Buccaneer was a 1 or 2 yard QB sneak at the age of 42, mind you, with a very deliberate spike after. So that was a great way to start off for him. Unfortunately, that's kind of where the high ended and it started to go downhill. And I think mostly to me, I watched about 2/3 of the game, I would say. It was more a disconnect between him and the offense, other than like him not playing well. I certainly think he missed some throws, but I think it's just one of those things. Again, I mentioned it earlier, no preseason games, less training camp, less time to gel with a new offense. It's the first time he's had to learn a new offense. And like you said yesterday, a new playbook in 20 years, there's going to be a little bit of rust and a little bit of discommunication or, miscommunication. Thank you.
There it is. But yeah, for sure. I definitely think you can't look at, and this goes for basically, I think every single thing we've talked about this entire week, is it's very hard to talk about this with a one game sample size. It's really not an adequate amount to,
this could be a very different show next week.
Let's put it that way. He could turn around and throw for 4 touchdowns and 0 interceptions and 400 yards next week for all we know. But I definitely think it's one of those things that we can probably check in on it for a minute or two every single week, because there's going to be this huge narrative, and the same thing with like the Texans and the Cardinals with those trades and all that. You know, who wins, Bill O'Brien getting David Johnson or the Arizona Cardinals getting DeAndre Hopkins? Definitely, once again, 1 point for the Cardinals yesterday. Hopkins with a career high reception number, and Kyler Murray definitely getting a great target out there in Arizona. But One last
spoiler alert. Bill O'Brien will never win anything.
No, he will, especially if it comes to playoffs.
Maybe a game here or there, but that's it.
It sucks that he has such a talented team that he doesn't actually know what to do with. Anyways, enough making fun of Bill O'Brien, and I'm sure we could do 30 more minutes on Andy Reid's face mask, but we don't really need to get
into it. We didn't even talk about that.
I don't want to, though. That's the problem.
No, there were enough memes on the internet. Go read an article.
Go read an article with memes. There you go. Anyways, the last thing we will talk about to close down this show, and I don't know why it went in this order, but if you watch the end, I actually saw this yesterday on social media towards the end of the game and also on Cam Newton's Instagram. We noticed a little scuffle as the Patriots were walking off the field at the end of the game with, they had kneed the ball for the last time. Clock was running out. And as they're walking away, it looked like a couple of Dolphins players were reaching at Cam Newton. And it turns out they're actually trying to snatch his chain and just take this necklace that apparently his grandmother got him. And they're just trying to rip it off his neck. This is 100% true. Because I only know this because Cam Newton posted on his Instagram after in basically what has become his own secret language of texts he used and says, tried to snatch my chain, but came away with that and the game. So Cam Newton really sticking it to the haters.
Oh,
He's got bars. He's got font that took me about 17 minutes to decipher and figure out what he actually was trying to say. But yeah, so someone tried to rip off his necklace at the end of game one. So it's looking like a great week of football.
I mean, it's Miami Dolphins and New England Patriots. The Dolphins are not used to a quarterback that, one, wears jewelry during the game, or two, can run circles around them. So it's just very different looking AFC.
Just imagine East. Brady coming out in just like $1 million chain. Just the fattest chain ever.
Do we need to add a chain watch bit to our
we
thing
We could
here,
do chain watch. We got Cam Newton's. We got Joe Burrow's Joe chain, Burrow, which yeah, did him yeah. absolutely jack squat this week. But yeah, we don't. These are all bits we can iron out, not wasting your guys' time anymore, because I think we've already done plenty of that this week.
And on that absolute bummer, we are going to close out the show here. Thank you guys so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. Remember to leave a like, rating, a review on whatever platform you are listening on. It would be very much appreciated. Let us know what you like, what you want to see, what you don't want to see. We are very open to suggestion, and crafting a show that you guys want to listen to. That being said, if you want to follow us outside the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram at Brady Bros Boston. May have a certain new kind of segment coming to that. Could be a little daily thing. I don't know. James still has to give the seal of approval. Anywho, our YouTube is Brady Bros. My Twitter is Brady Bros Nick. James' Twitter is James_B_Boston. James, anything else to say?
I just want to say that was just, I have been waiting so long for this week for football to return. I'm so happy it's back. A lot of fun stuff to talk about every single week. So make sure you tune, make sure you subscribe so you get those, you know, turn those notifications on so you obviously get the episode every single week when it comes out Tuesday mornings, unless something happens with the editing process, whatever. We're looking at a great Week 2 matchup, which we didn't even talk about, against Seattle, but we can guys talk about after the fact. 8:20 Eastern time this Sunday. It's going to be a great game. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you guys all so much again for listening. Very excited to be kind of back talking about a lot of fun stuff as we move down the stretch here, and we'll see you guys all next week.
See ya.